Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, I'm Craig, and welcome to another episode of Football Kit Memories, the football podcast that gets under the shirt. In today's episode, I'm joined by YouTuber and Binday Brewing Co.'s Robbie Knox. During our chat, I find out about Robbie's start in a TV business, spending his 20s working at Soccer AM, and more latterly, how he's grown his own YouTube account. Robbie also talks to me about his new brewery, its progress so far, and his aspirations for the future. Later, and as always, I asked Robbie to pick out his three favourite football shirts. Remember, you can listen to this and other episodes of Football Kit Memories on all major audio platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please do like, follow, share, but above all, please do enjoy the podcast. Okay, so today on the podcast, I'm delighted to say I'm joined by video producer, YouTuber, and more latterly brewery owner, it's Robbie Knox. How are you, Robbie?
I'm very well, pal. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks, mate. I'm really delighted we've been able to get the time in for this. I've been looking forward to having a chat with you.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it too. I like football shirts, so I'm keen.
Wonderful stuff, wonderful stuff. So, Robbie, I wanted to first kind of talk to you about your YouTube account. Your background is in video production, right?
Yeah, so to give you a brief history, I went to university, went to Canada for a year, came back, worked at a TV studio for a year as a runner, just making tea, then went to Sky and worked at Soccer AM for 7 years, then right. Somewhere else for a couple of years, then started my own production company, and more recently I started doing YouTube.
So the YouTube's kind of span out of your expertise in video and stuff, and you produce all kinds of content, right? So a lot of it's kind of in-depth conversations with people, but other times it's like funny content about like your everyday life as well.
Yeah, it's kind of anything really, because I think the idea of the YouTube is that if you can sort of make some income from doing it, it frees you up to do what you want. You become sort of independent of location sort of thing to a degree. Yeah. So I didn't want to do just one type of thing, because then it means you're sort of stuck doing that forever, which I think it's the hardest way to grow on YouTube, because it's not like if I do some skiing videos. If I just did skiing videos, it's quite easy to get an audience, I think, of people who like skiing videos sort of thing. But then they'll might subscribe for that and then come back a week later from taking the bins out. And they're like, okay, this isn't quite right. So I think it's a harder way to grow, but I think it's at the end of it, if you do well enough, I think it just does give you that freedom to do whatever you like.
That's nice. You create freedom. So you've got over like 100,000 subscribers. Like, how long have you been working at that, doing it?
So I started, I'm trying to think when I started, probably 2018, okay. I guess. 2018, I think I probably started doing it. Spring, summer 2018, I'm going to say, I guess, but that might be wrong by a year. But I think that's right. And it's just kept going through there. I've had some times where I've had big boos. I was in a video that Jack Mate did where he was talking about his favourite YouTubers. He was talking about ranking YouTubers and tier lists and put me really high up, like level with KSI on this thing. And then in the weeks following that, I think I probably added about 50,000 subscribers then. And then just carried on since then. But I mean, it's because I sort of do it on the side of work, it's there's times when I'll get a big boost of subscribers and then I won't do much for a bit. So if you were like anything, if you're consistent, I think I'd have grown quicker, but I'm enjoying it.
Well, I guess like collaboration seems like a really
key part of that growth, like you were saying. So Jack Mate was someone that you mentioned. You've been involved in his Happy Hour podcast, right?
Yeah. So I did. He got me on that once just to talk about Soccer AM stories, really. And then I came back on, I think, for like a Halloween or a Christmas episode or something like that. And then people were generally quite positive about me.
Yeah.
And so I've been back on it a few times, and then eventually just got me on as a co-host along with Stevie.
Right.
So yeah, I love doing that.
It always strikes me like the community on YouTube, it is, like I say, it's very much about collaboration, and it's working with people, meeting people, seeing what you can do together, merge your audiences and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's what attracts me to it, to be honest, because I think there's, like, coming from TV, it's quite competitive, I think. It's like, I remember when we weren't really like that at Soccer AM, but I remember at Soccer AM, we wanted to play a music video for a band that we had on, so could we play the new video?
Yeah.
And they said, like, oh, no, you can't have it because Zane Lowe's show wants to play it first.
Okay.
I remember thinking, and it wouldn't be Zane Lowe, it'd be the production team, whatever like that. But I remember thinking, well, are you like 10 years old? Why do you care if you play a video? It doesn't matter. Like, it was so weird. Whereas I think YouTube is much more collaborative. People will work together, and there's that sort of feeling of like a rising tide lifts all ships, and everyone will do well if you work together. So yeah, that really attracted me to it.
Nice. We're talking about that kind of like free license to do things as well that you touched on. We were just talking off air there. I've been really enjoying the content you've been making. You've decided to start your own brewery.
Yeah. So in what I worked out is that doing with YouTube, like for people who don't know, once you get to a certain level, you can get ad revenue from YouTube, which basically means that when people watch your video, YouTube plays adverts and you get a proportion of the money from the adverts. And so I don't make a huge amount of that generally, but most videos I do, I'll probably make about 50 quid on an average video or something like that. Oh, okay. from that. So which means that you can sort of try any idea, anything up to the value of £50 for free, as long as you made a video on it.
Okay.
So I did a video about starting a wormery that was under £50 or something. And I saw in lockdown one, I thought, okay, there's these beer making kits, and I can make some beer and it's just under 50 quid. So I could probably do that for free. So I sort of did that. And then it went well. And I was surprised that you could make beer at home. I knew beer is like four ingredients, yeast, malt, hops and water. But I didn't know it was easy to do in your kitchen, relatively easy to do in your kitchen. And because it seems like the kind of thing you need a factory for. It doesn't seem that simple. And I was also surprised that it was nice, because my memory of home brewing kits was in like the 90s when my friends' dads would brew beer in their kitchen and it would stink. And the reviews were never good. There were always jokes about people's homebrew being like disgusting and all this. So I was surprised it was nice. And it wasn't the way it's supposed to taste. It was like a sort of BrewDog Elvis juice kit. But it didn't taste anything like Elvis juice. But it did taste fresh and nice and like actual beer. And so then, since then, I got some more brewing kit from some people, a friend of a friend, basically just gave me some old brew kit, which was fantastic. And then from there, we went, and then I took that to a brewery up in Grimsby that Lloyd Griffith introduced me to called Doc's Beers. And while I was up there, they said, look, do you want to do a collaboration beer with us? And then my friend Mike had been sort of doing a little bit of brewing with me, and we just sort of said, look, should we start a little business? And the idea of it being that it's the YouTube brewery, so we share everything that goes on with viewers, and then we can share everything that goes on with viewers, and then they can sort of come along the journey. And then eventually the long-term aim would be to start a physical brewery, and you could collaborate with YouTubers, so get Max Fosh in to brew a beer or something and do things like that and go from there. So we've done a collaboration that's been released with Docs. We've done something with S43 up in County Durham. We've just done something that's not out yet with Lervig, who are quite a big brewery out in Norway.
Right.
And we've got some other things in the pipeline sort of thing. So it's been really enjoyable doing it, and yeah, I'm loving it.
That's really cool. So how has that been received by the craft beer community? Is that very different to the YouTube community that you're used to working with?
Yeah, I mean, the craft beer itself is a very sort of collaborative space as well. I think that's what I quite liked about it, was it's like YouTube, is that people will do these collaborations together.
Yeah.
In terms of the breweries, I mean, they're quite good because they're not they're good at, a lot of them are quite good at Instagram-y stuff, but not a lot of them do much on YouTube. I mean, within a day of starting our YouTube channel, it was the second biggest craft brewery YouTube channel behind BrewDog sort of thing. Wow. That's not a massive thing because not many of them do stuff. It's got more, I think, more than either one of Carling or Carlsberg. We've got more subscribers than one of them, sort of thing, quite quickly. Okay. Because beer, people haven't traditionally told their stories particularly well on YouTube. In terms of craft beer fans, it seems to be positive so far. It's quite a sort of, the real sort of craft beer people are into new stuff. Like, a lot of them don't drink the same beer twice, or very rarely will, sort of thing. They're always looking for a new thing. And and so the fact that we're doing new things is probably beneficial to that. We'll see how that goes. But to be honest, if it's such a broad audience, you can sort of do things for all different things. You can do things for the people who want the new things all the time. Yeah. But then also, a lot of my viewers will drink Holston or Foster's or something like that. They're not craft beery people, sort of thing. So there's that real mix of people.
Do you know what I've really enjoyed about what you guys are doing is that it's very much story led, like you say, narrative led. But I think you've been honest all the way through and just saying, look, I'm just trying something here. We're not experts. We're working with people who are experts. Come and follow us on the journey. I think that's what's so engaging about it.
Yeah, I think as long as you don't pretend to know stuff that you don't, I think it's fine. As long as it's coming from a genuine place and you're going, I've brewed a bit of beer. I've enjoyed brewing beer. I want to carry on brewing beer. I like to delve into doing it on some form of professional level, but I don't know anything about running a brewery and take people along the journey. I think it's fine. I think when I was younger, I probably thought, oh, you've got to pretend that you know stuff, all that. Whereas I think it's a position of strength to say, I don't know the answer to this, because no one does. There's no way. When Barack Obama walked into the White House, he'd have been like, I don't know what to do now, to a degree. Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't know what's happening, president. No one does until you've done it, sort of thing. So I think everyone goes into new things not knowing. And if you ask the questions or are honest, I think people are quite receptive to it and are keen to help. People like showing off their knowledge.
Very nice. Very nice. So, and the idea there is to have like a physical brewery, like you said then.
I think, yeah, the long term aim. Well, we'll see how it goes. We might find out that we don't enjoy it. We might find out that it takes up too much time or whatever, or it's too hard or whatever, or whatever. But the long term plan would be to start a physical brewery in Norwich that you could then do content from. And it would almost be like a sort of documentary on running a brewery then, because you can sort of, you have people in there all the time, you can get characters coming through from that. It could become away from just being, because at the minute it's me and Mike, but most of things are coming from my audience from YouTube and stuff like that. So you could try to make it its own standalone thing that becomes less dependent on me, and build that up. And also the thing is, by going this way around, a lot of the time people will raise money, because it's not cheap to start a brewery. You struggle to do it for less than 150 grand, sort of thing. That's probably about the minimum you could realistically do it from. And even then, you'd probably want a bit more. Yeah. But I think people raise money, in some cases, get into quite a bit of debt, start a brewery, and then try and find an audience for it. Whereas if you do it the other way around, it opens up things like crowdfunding. And if you are going to be the YouTube community's brewery, it would be nice for, rather than just the crowdfunding where you can give us some money and you get a t-shirt or something like that, if you did equity-based crowdfunding in whatever form that is, and then people who buy into the story and like it, you go, okay, you can own a bit of the brewery. And then at the end of it, if it becomes super successful, they could make some money out of it as well, sort of thing. I mean, equally, they could lose their money if it all gets wrong. but it gives people a chance who are passionate about it to be co-owners of a brewery, and then give those people perks and access and stuff relevant to that. And that's the sort of plan, one of the plans of funding it. Because quite a lot of people say, I'd love to invest in this. But I think we'd ideally like to get people who are involved in it rather than just faceless investors. Like,
name on the wall kind of thing. That's interesting.
Yeah, and all that and stuff like, and you could do stuff like, you could have like beer festivals for people who have invested or stuff like that, or access for things like that, or different levels, or you could get pick people who investors to come down and help brew beers or something like that, or name things. There's so much you could do getting people involved. And I think if you can keep, if you treat people rather than just taking their money and forgetting about them,
yeah.
If you go, you're a co-owner of the brewery and you're constantly involving them in things and making them feel part of stuff, going, hey, we've got a decision, we want to do this or this, what does everyone think?
Yeah.
In whatever platform that is, then I think it will, people feel more involved in it and want it to succeed. And then if you own a bit of a brewery and you're buying some beer, there's a pretty good chance you're going to go, well, I'll probably buy beer from the brewery I own.
Exactly.
So it works well. And also you get, if you're, because we're doing a podcast at the minute with the brewery called Yes Sir Like a Brewery. It's been a bit sporadic early on because we're just sort of trying to find time to do it and working out the best way to do it.
Yeah.
But the idea of that is you can get knowledge. If you've got a problem, if you go, hey, we need to rent a van to do this, but we don't know anything about vans, what sort of things do we need? You're going to get people listening going, hey, I'm an expert in vans. This is the one you want. Yeah. We hired this van. It's not very good for this. This won't work because of this. Or people going, hey, I lease vans. We'll give you a good deal or something like that. You'll get people who are involved in the journey getting involved and contributing and hopefully solving problems that you have along the way because of the honesty and because they want to get involved, I hope.
Yeah.
We'll right. See, I guess.
It's that collaborative thing like you're talking about, right? It's working together to achieve the greater good, which I really do like. So it's called Bin Day Brewing. Where can people get the product? Is there a website?
At the minute, so there is the, at the minute we haven't, because of the way we're doing it, if you want to buy physical beer, the only way you can do it at the minute is, at the time of recording, is s43brewing.com, which is the brewery we last collaborated with. We've got a pair of IPAs called Pacific Days and Atlantic Nights that are both using the same base hop, but two different styles, a West Coast and East Coast IPA.
Oh, okay.
I think they're really nice. I'm a big fan of those. That's the only place you can buy the beer, because at the minute, we don't want to have to hire a premises to store beer and have to get the licensing that comes with all that. So we're doing that. If very soon there'll be a beer, a lager with Lervig, the details to follow on that. So if you check out the Bin Day Brewing socials, we're Bin Day Brewing on Instagram, Twitter, most active ones, and then you'll find out about that. I don't know quite how you'll be able to buy that yet. We'll find out. The long-term plan is bindaybrewing.com. So I tell you what, the best thing to do is to go to bindaybrewing.com and sign up for the mailing list, because that will get you access before everyone else to any new beer stuff.
Perfect. Love it. So Robbie, we touched on it earlier, or you touched on it, in fact. It would be remiss of me not to ask you about Soccer AM, which is obviously such an iconic football program. How did you first get involved in working with that?
I was working at a TV studio in Wandsworth in London, where they did things like 15 to 1, if you're old enough to remember that. I worked on the first series, The Weakest Link as well, things like that. So a few different things on there. And it was, I was a runner. I was making tea. I was putting towels in dressing rooms, doing little jobs along the way. But it's the traditional first rung into TV. And a guy I knew called Dan Trelfer, who's also a YouTuber now, is very good. He was working for Tim Lovejoy, who was the presenter at the Times agent, which was called Avalon. And he knew that Tim was looking for someone to work on Soccer AM in a junior role. Mm-hmm. He knew I watched Soccer AM because I talked about it quite a lot. And he said, why don't you send them a CV? So I sent a CV off, got a job interview, got the job. And that was it, really. So through luck in some way, but also it's because I met Dan doing student radio. So it's through doing media-y stuff.
Okay.
And just putting yourself out there that leads to it.
So remind me of some of the characters then. There was the Colonel and Ginger. You were Ginger, right?
I was Ginger. So I was Colonel and Ginger. So Neil Smythe, who's now Operations Director for Hashtag, the YouTube football team, he was Colonel and I was Ginger. So I was a mute, bisexual, alcoholic Air Force pilot, essentially. I didn't have any words. It was the best job to do, because Neil had to learn all the lyrics.
Yeah.
Learn all the lines and do the things. And all I did was just say like dra dra. And it would get most of the laughs. So it was the greatest job. I did a thing called Fixtures Man that was basically a joke I never really got. It was basically a character who did the fixtures when you go, ladies.
I remember
talking about all different things.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the mega shed. so I did that. And then I did things where I just went out as me and just interviewed people in the street. And I get called tramp because I had long hair at the time and a beard. Right. But around the other time, other things that were on, other people did, like Fenner's, who presents it now, did a character called Barry the Scotch Expert. Sheepheads did Topless Weather Outside. There were quite a few little character repeating characters that went on around that time.
So were you part of the team that was writing that at the time as well, then, in the background?
Yeah. So we were in the production team. So I never went into it intending to be on screen. Or that was another part of the thing. What would basically happen is you'd be there a couple of weeks and then to say, oh, we need someone to be an old woman in this sketch. Can you be an old woman and just stand around the background? And so you'd go and do that. And then it would be, right, we need someone to do this. And if you didn't mess it up too badly, or if you were good and professional and did all right, you just do something else. And then it would build things. So Fiction Man just came from a one-off joke that people liked. So it came back the next week and just went on like that. So it was, but people would come up to you and go like, are you all like, what do you guys do during the week? And you're like, we'll make the show. My first job was like getting props and getting costumes in, doing stuff like that. And then eventually I moved on to more editing, working with editors to edit things, going out and shooting things. Yeah. And then my stuff became mostly guest stuff. So it was all like, in some cases, booking the guests, or someone else might book the guests. And then I'd phone them up, write the interviews, make sure they got there on time, make sure they brief them on the show, get them on set on time, take them away, take them to the pub after and send them home.
Yeah.
Whilst also I was doing music, that was another big thing. I did all the music for the show. So I'd listen to all the music, work out ideas, take it all to Tim, cool. Lovejoy, and we'd decide together what we did. So yeah, it was a great job to do in your 20s. I loved it.
Yeah. What was it like? I mean, we're talking sort of 10, 15 years ago, right? What is it like when you've got people like me and people like kind of walking up to you in the street and wanting to talk to you about that, recognising you from that all that time, even after all this length of time, you know?
It was quite weird. It's a bit weird, but it's not. I don't think people talk about fame being good or bad. Mm. And I'm using fame in the loosest possible sense. But in that sort of 20s male audience, if you went out to the pub on a Saturday night, someone would always come up to you, sort of thing. So it was being relatively famous in a certain section of society. But I don't think it's good or bad. I mean, there's advantages or disadvantages of it, sort of thing. There's not. But people were generally really nice because everyone liked the show. I think it's different if you're famous for being horrific or something, or if you're divisive. But even when people come up to YouTube now, all my YouTube stuff's quite nice. I'm not slagging people off. I'm not Boris Johnson. I imagine gets a real mix of people come up to him. You know, I mean, sort of thing like that. But I think it's just a different thing, and sometimes it gives you opportunities and sometimes there are disadvantages to it, and that you lose a little bit of that privacy sort of thing. You can be in a place talking to friends and you sort of become aware that people have recognized you and the people you're talking to aren't aware of this, and you're sort of carrying on the conversation with someone. You're also aware that someone over there is talking about it. It's quite weird.
Yeah.
But not in a bad way or something. You just are aware of it a lot of the time. So it's just a thing. But then equally you get opportunities. You'll meet people and they'll go, hey, do you want to come and do this? Or you get opportunities that you wouldn't otherwise. So it's just a thing rather than, I think, a good or a bad thing. And it depends as well how you react to it. And if you get caught up in it, I think it can become problematic if you tie your life up in it.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously, you see some people do, and
nice mate. It's like I say, it's an iconic thing from my 20s too, so it must have been amazing.
It was a great thing. I wouldn't want to do it now because you lose your Fridays evenings, you lose a lot of your Saturdays sort of thing. It wouldn't work for me personally having kids. I'd lose a lot of time. It was long hours. But at the time when you haven't got any responsibilities in your 20s, it was fantastic. And at the time, I was aware of, we were aware of the, I guess, sort of cultural significance at the time, and that it was, in the terms of things, quite sort of special for what it was. And it did, when I left that, I was thinking, I don't really want to work in TV because there's no shows I like more than Soccer AM at the time, sort of thing. I was looking around, I was thinking, there's very few shows I'd want to work on. I don't want to go and work on T4 or on this show that I hate, something like that. So I was aware at the time of what it was, I think. I think we all were.
Coming up, Robbie shares his football kit memories.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast. Alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So look, Robbie, should we talk about some football shirts?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so the question I ask everybody on the podcast is, what do football shirts mean to you?
I think as a kid, I think it's the identity, first of all. I think if whatever you wear is says something about you. People don't just pick random clothes. Yeah. You don't go and just pick a random thing from Asda to wear. You say something like that. But I think when you're young, obviously it's my kids are wearing, they've started supporting Norwich. We moved to Norwich in the summer, my 7 and 4 year old. So they wear those and identifies them as Norwich fans. I think also it says things about things you've done. Like I know myself and quite a lot of people will, me less so now, but when I was younger, if I went abroad somewhere, I would buy a football shirt from that place. And it sort of goes, I've been to here. This tells you some sort of story about your life or something that you've done there. I very rarely will just wear a random football shirt. Even though I've got, occasionally I will wear, like I've got a Belgium shirt from the 2000s that I got from when I was at Soccer Aid, because you get shirts sent in and there'd just be a lot hanging around the office. Take one. But it's a shirt, I just really quite like it as a shirt. It's got a weird shirt to wear randomly. But generally they mean something too, if you are going to wear it, sort of thing. And I've got some sort of slightly weird shirts as well that I like. Like FIFA, I just work for EA Sports, and when a new FIFA comes out, they tend to send me the game, and it will come with a sort of limited edition FIFA 22 shirt sort of thing. So,
yeah,
I don't know where it is. I've got it around somewhere. So there's things like that you get sort of weird ones, and there's football shirts I've played. We played in the first at Soccer Aid. We played in the first game at the new Wembley Stadium when it was open to the public, because you can't open Wembley. It turns out I didn't know anything about opening stadium. You can't just open a stadium and have the FA Cup final in it. You have to have what they call ramp up events, where you test it with 20,000 people and then maybe 40,000 or something like that. So you can test all the sort of security and the facilities and everything to make sure, well, stress testing, if you will. So we played the first one. They gave, like, I think 20,000 tickets to people who lived locally to come down and see the new stadium. And we played in a tournament there. So I am technically the first goalkeeper to win a trophy at the new Wembley Stadium.
Wow.
So I've got my shirt from there that I've meant to get framed for since that was that 15 years something since the stadium opened. So I've got that in a box somewhere, but my intention is to get it framed. So they mean, most football shirts I own will mean something to me.
Right, nice. So let's talk about your first shirt that you've chosen, Robbie. It's the Liverpool home shirt from 91 to 93 by Adidas. Tell me more.
It's my favourite football shirt. I'm a Liverpool fan. I grew up in Kent in the 1980s. And my friends supported Liverpool. They were good. So, and then when I got a bit older, I found out where Liverpool was. I was like, oh, that's very inconvenient for me. that's a real, going to be a real issue to get into games. So I don't get me wrong, I've had lots of good time supporting Liverpool. Been to a couple of Champions League finals. I was in Istanbul when we won after being 3-0 down against AC Milan. Mm. But this is my favourite kit. It's so clean. It's the one with, if people are imagining, it's the Adidas one. Candy is the sponsor. It's got three stripes along the arm and it's just pure red. And it came off the back of one of the worst Liverpool kits, which is the sort of flecked Candy one, which like the sort of like these little, it just looks like you've got dandruff essentially if you wear it. It was a horrible kit. And even as a kid, I was like, this is absolutely disgusting. And you came with this really sleek thing. And it's the reason I did the school run today and I'm wearing Adidas trainers with three stripes down the side of it. It's because it was so cool at the time. These things impact you. It's the reason that when I'm buying trainers, my first choice normally will probably be Adidas rather than Nike or whatever else. I think because these things, you pick a team with like clothes early on, don't you? You go, I'm into this because of that. So I think that's my dream, certainly my dream Liverpool kit.
Yeah. So it leaves its mark on you, it leaves its mark from childhood. That's really interesting.
Yeah. And I wish I'm sure I've still got it somewhere. I can't believe it would have been thrown away, but I can't find it in any boxes or something like that. But
yeah.
I don't know how old I'd have been then. I'd have been 13, 14. But the thing is, back then, shirts were quite baggy. So there's a chance if I really slim down, I might be able to get into it. But I'm not sure how realistic that is.
So, Robbie, your second choice is the Scotland World Cup 98 home shirt by Umbro.
Yeah, it's not a great football shirt, if I'm totally honest. It's got that sort of slightly tartany. There's too much going on it. It's got the tartany, colory bit on it, but it just reminds me of probably my favourite World Cup, not because it was necessarily the greatest tournament, although it was. Very good, but it came at the end of my 3 years at university. I was living in Norwich still for it. It was right at the end of some of the best 3 years of my life. England, and I'm a Scotland fan, but England and Scotland were both involved in it. There was lots of iconic things going on. It was the last World Cup Scotland have been in, and it was just a brilliant, brilliant summer of just watching football, hanging out with friends. Just a great time to be alive. It comes straight after Euro 96, which was fantastic as well.
Just
a brilliant tournament and a brilliant time for me personally.
So very much a time and place thing for you. What was it like?
Yeah, rather than the kids itself, yeah.
Fair enough. Look, I'm a Scotland fan as well, and obviously I've got an English accent like you. What was it like for you growing up a Scotland fan with an English accent?
Absolutely fine, because it's not like, it's different if you did it the other way around, I think, because you're like choosing, like I've never lived in Scotland, but my parents were from Scotland. It was from a young age, my whole age was in Scotland. It got drummed into me to support Scotland sort of thing, and I did, and I've loved it. So I think it's quite an easy thing. No one's really going, oh, you're a glory hunter, because you definitely aren't. So it's quite easy to do it. It's quite nice because Scotland fans in general have a much better reputation than England fans, because I know I'm not lumping in all England fans. I know there's lots of England fans who are great, but if you look at occasionally people on Twitter will go to me, someone say, if I tweet something about, yes, sir, I can boogie, they'll go, oh, imagine the best thing about being your team being the song you sing. I think, hang on, your team, your fans this summer smashed up central London. I've got yourself a stadium ban because you broke into the stadium. There was a lot of booing of the knee, a lot of, sort of racism sort of stuff going on there as well. If we're singing a song, that's not that bad. Do you know what I mean? So, and I am saying it's obviously very much a minority, but I think I think Scotland fans are quite pleasant generally. It's quite inclusive. And yeah, there is the sort of rivalry with England. I'm personally not of the I want England to lose camp. I always start each tournament wanting England to do quite well.
Right.
But then by the end of it, because it's more exciting in the country. If England are in a tournament, it's better because the whole place is excited. It's great. But what happens through it is England fans are so obnoxious to me throughout it. They can't just, they can't, like I don't, like West Ham beat Liverpool. I'm not going to, like at the weekend, that's great. West Ham are traditionally have been the underdogs. They're having a great season this season. Right. That's fine. It's weird if I start going, ah, you lost, or something like that. It's like, I find it weird when like Man City pump Norwich and they're going, oh, everyone's like, ah. Oh. Man City fans go, yeah, we thrashed you. Oh, of course you did. You've one of your players you bought this summer cost more than the entire Norwich squad. Of course you won. So yeah. I mean, this is sort of, it works in different ways. And I think a lot of England fans don't get that. And as a result, they're like, ah, like hammering. And then so by the end of the tournament, what I'm trying to say is by the end of the tournament, I'm like cheering on Germany in a penalty shootout. Whereas at the beginning, I want England to do well. So and I would. Like, I wanted England to lose the final this year, and I was absolutely delighted when they did. Yeah. But going into it, I would quite happily want England to win it if England fans were nicer to Scotland, essentially. Jack Mate was a lot of it this year. Jack Mate was quite a lot of slagging off Scotland. He was the reason I wanted England to lose.
Yeah, I noticed that myself, actually, yeah. How did you feel then in the Wembley game? How would you have felt if Scotland beat England at Wembley?
I'd have been absolutely delighted, yeah. I want Scotland to beat England every time, yeah, 100%. But it did feel like a victory because it was because we outplayed them and it was a draw. And people are going, and again, people are saying, you're celebrating a 0-0 draw. Yeah, of course you are, sort of thing. It's because we're the massive underdogs in that game. It's a population of, I don't know, what, 5-6 million people compared to, I don't know what it is, I think 50 million. These are rough guesses at numbers, sort of thing. So it is. It's like saying to Norwich last season. Oh, why are you celebrating winning the championship? We're in Europe because it's different things. It's different levels of success for different teams. And the other good thing about supporting Scotland is that the best a Scotland team has ever done is reach the group stages of a tournament, which means. When Scotland reached the group stages of a tournament, they are the joint best Scotland team of all time. This summer was the joint best Scotland performance of all time. So it's like in 90, I might be going back a bit to for younger for you listeners, but in 1990, when Cameroon reached the quarterfinals of the World Cup, it was this great story, really exciting story. It's like going to them, oh, you got knocked out in the quarterfinals, we reached the semis. Like, well, yeah, they're Cameroon. It's different. Sort of thing. So I think for Scotland, it's. I think I remember talking to a Blackburn fan who said the worst thing that ever happened was Blackburn winning the league because now it's so depressing. Because he goes, it was great for a year. He goes, but now it's like, oh, do you remember the time we won the Premier League and now we're rubbish? Something is like that sort of. He says it makes it like you go back and go, oh yeah, that was good, wasn't it? I don't know how much truth of that there is for everyone, but. I can't remember what I was saying now, but that.
Well, look, as we're recording, Scotland might be on the cusp of getting to the playoffs for their first World Cup since '98. So, fingers crossed, mate. Brilliant. Pair of us.
Yeah. It's looking good, but like it's what I loved about being a Scotland fan is when we were in the playoff. I can't remember who it was against now.
Serbia.
Yes, in the playoff final there, and when they equalised in the last minute, and all my English sporting friends, because then all my English sporting friends are wanting Scotland to get through. This is the time where I'm bonding with everyone. They're wanting Scotland. They're going, oh, I can't believe it. I'm like, oh, you sweet naive things. This happens every time. It always gets to here. Lovely that you didn't expect this to happen. But I was like, yeah. This seems about right. It's the penalty shootout that was the unexpected bit. We'll see what happens, but it'll be incredible to see Scotland in the World Cup again.
Absolutely. So look, your final shirt you've chosen, Robbie, is a team with a little bit more success than Scotland. It's Barcelona home shirt, 92-95 by Kappa.
Yeah, I got this. This is one of those trips abroad. I got this when I went away to Barcelona. And in the sort of 90s, you'd quite often get the sort of rip-off market shirts around. Do you know what I mean? The ones that you like. My first ever Liverpool kit I got was one my mum bought me from Sittingbourne Market. You had to sew the badge on a red shirt yourself, and it was like, so it's the embarrassing one to have something. But this is like buying. She had to seek out the actual shirt. I think I managed to persuade. I think I just have the money or whatever I'll save up to get this shirt myself. And what I like about this is it's a great shirt. It's a shirt of like a great period of time. Like I think it was like Romario, Stoichkov, Laudrup, maybe that sort of era of Barcelona. Yeah. And also what I love about it is it was the shirt from 1992 to 1995. Mm-hmm. that never happens now. Like, and it was the sort of time where you wouldn't necessarily change shirts. You change shirts normally if you change sponsors or change kit manufacturers a lot of the time. It was, there was a reason to change a shirt. Yeah. And I like that. It wasn't just every year we're going to bring out three shirts to rinse as much cash out of you as possible. Yeah, you could be Barcelona, you'll go, we're just going to hang on to this kit for 3 years.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, there's some really nice design touches on this one, like the script in the collar, Barca script in like different colors, half and half, and the kind of imprint as well, the Kappa logo, the Barca writing again. It's quality shirt, this one.
Yeah. And it's a kit manufacturer that you didn't really get in Britain as well. It was like a bit cool, like this Kappa thing. It's a bit cool. And I still own the shirt, and it's the only football shirt I wear other than to play or watch football. I mean, I'll wear Scotland shirts to watch it, but I'm not a type of person who will wear a Scotland shirt around. I won't wear a Liverpool shirt around. I won't wear this. And I'll wear them to play football or something like that. But I will watch. But it's the one, I think it's such a cool shirt. I will wear it as a fashion item out and about now. And it still fits me from whatever year it was I bought it. So,
yeah, I love
it. It's tighter than it was, but it's
slimmer fit. I like it.
Well, it was a period of baggy football shirts. So now the baggy football shirt now fits in with a more slim fit pattern. It's perfect.
Robbie, that was absolutely fantastic, mate. Thanks very much for sharing your football kit memories with me. So people can find out about Bin Day Brewing on bindaybrewing.co.uk, you said?
Bindaybrewing.com. So yeah, just go there if you want. Sign up for the mailing list and you'll keep get updated on the latest things. If you want beers now, you can go to s43brewing.com.
Lovely.
Yeah, it's come and join the adventure.
Follow you on YouTube as well, Robbie Knox, and socials.
Yeah, YouTube. I'm Robbie Knox on Twitter, Mega Robbie on Instagram. You can find me. If you know how the internet works, people, just use the internet and find me in whatever way you want.
Lovely stuff, mate. Well, an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Brilliant. Cheers, Craig. Thank you.
So there you have it. Massive thanks to Robbie for sharing his football kit memories with me. Remember, you can follow me and my own collection on Instagram or get in touch via Twitter or email. Make sure you follow Robbie too on YouTube, his socials, and follow his Bin Day Brewing accounts. The music you heard was produced by Evil Ed. You can check out his music on his Bandcamp. There's links to absolutely everything I mentioned there in the notes section. And finally, thanks to you for listening. If you have enjoyed it, please do spread the word, give me a follow on social, and subscribe to Football Kit Memories on your podcast player of choice. Sharing is caring. And other than that, I guess that's it. Until next time, I'll catch you later.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.